You remember that song, those of you who are above maybe 40 or 50? You were listening to that song off of YouTube, which I'm giving credit for, so that we don't avoid any legal problems. Now, I have a confession to make to you today. I like the Partridge Family music. I know it was really big at the time, and then it just totally died, and you never ever hear their songs on the radio again. But it was really, I don't know if it's nostalgia for me or if it's just a time when there was happy music. It was a time of happy music, and their song was just happy. I have another confession to make. I really like to be happy. I know, it's weird to have to confess that, isn't it? To seem like you have to confess to want to be happy. But that kind of feels like that's what I have to do. And I have to admit, much of my life, I have lived trying to find happiness. That's kind of been the goal. But I didn't know whether it should be the goal. And I have to admit, I don't know if it's because of my personality or just where God had brought me through, but there were long stretches of time where I couldn't find happiness. It was elusive, and there have been stretches of dark journeys and dark times, and it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating when you want to be happy and you can't find a way to be happy. I feel for people who go through these periods of depression and sadness, and they're longing to be happy. And there's lots of reasons why people are unhappy. I don't even want to get into all the reasons, from biological to spiritual to all the different things. But sometimes it feels like this carrot's being dangled out in front of you, but you reach for it and it's always just beyond reach. Everybody seems to have that in common. Everybody wants to be happy. If you would Google the word happy, you would find 1 billion links. It is that prevalent. And most of us, we don't want to just be happy some of the time. We're looking to be happy all the time. But wanting happiness and getting happiness, attaining happiness, are two totally different things. Psychotherapist Lynn Rosen and speaker John Liddick once co-hosted a radio show called The Pursuit of Happiness. I guess they gave up trying because their final act in life was putting bags over each other's heads and taking each other's lives. A tragic story of two people who never found what they were looking for. So here's the question. Has the church been much help in dealing with this concept of happiness? I'm not so sure. We're just as confused about that word because we're not really sure what it means. So if you were to gather in your circle of friends, Christian friends, here are some of the questions you might debate, even argue over. Is happiness under our control? Does God want us happy? Is God happy? Is it wrong to make happiness our goal? Is joy different than happiness? But what about holiness? Maybe holiness should be the goal rather than happiness. It's confusing. And I find most people are confused. Well, we better get moving if we're going to answer some of these questions. So let's start with seeing the difference between joy and happiness. Now, over the last few decades, there's been a shift in those understandings of those words in our society. And the common belief today is that happiness is this temporary disposition based on external circumstances. Okay? I'm happy today because I get to take a nap, or I get to go out to eat, or I go buy something. That's what we've started to define happiness as that way. Rather, joy, though, in the Christian world, is more of an internal disposition based on spiritual peace that you have. That's kind of our current understanding, and lots of authors you will read will separate them that way. And it does seem to make sense to separate internal happiness from external circumstances. I get that. But some Christians will say, you know what? Joy is not really the goal either. Holiness is the real goal. And that makes some sense as well. But there's a lot of faults in some of that logic. There's some misleading things about that. So let's start with just a quick sample of some of the scriptures. Now, I'm going to read three of them pretty quick, and they're listed in your bulletin as well as up on the screen. I'm not asking you to go look those up in the Bible, but if you do want to look up a scripture in the Bible, we'll be doing one later in the service, Zephaniah 3:17. You can turn there if you use your pew Bible. That's page 936. Just save that one for later. If you'd like to look it up, save that one for later. But right now, I'm just going to read the ones from the bulletin, and I think they're on the screen. So here they are. John 16:24b says, "Ask and you'll receive, and your joy will be made complete." Joy. Okay, Psalm 68:3. "But may the righteous be glad and rejoice before God. May they be happy and joyful." Okay. And Hebrews 12:14 says, "Make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy." And then there's all other scriptures on being blessed and finding peace, and there's so many of them. But let's concentrate on joy, happy, and holy. Now, if you'd asked me this before I did my research, if I were to rank them from least spiritual to most spiritual, I would have said, well, happy is probably a worldly term, so let's make that the least spiritual. Then we'll probably go to joy, and then we'll go to holiness being the most spiritual, because that sounds like it's a word from the Bible more so. But let's start with this key point. The Bible doesn't make any distinction between the word joy and the word happiness. The Bible dictionary defines happiness as a state of joy experienced by people and of God. It's like the Bible uses these words interchangeably and together. In fact, if you even go back to the King James Bible, which some people consider, you know, that's the accurate Bible, you will find the word happiness is found in the King James 29 times. Our historical fathers had no problem with the word happiness. They were just adamant that happiness was found in Christ. C.S. Lewis once said, "It's a Christian's duty for everyone to be as happy as he or she can." So it's important to note sometimes when you get a new Bible translation, why do they keep changing the words to Bible translations? Why do they keep coming out with a new one and changing? Well, one of the reasons is that we start to change the meaning of words over time, right? So they start to get away from the word happiness today because we start to define it differently. They change over time. Because today, happiness has come to mean more of a good mood or a feeling, again, emphasizing circumstances. But when the Bible uses the word happy and joy, they are always emphasizing the internal peace that comes from God. The last word on our list is holy. It's different from the other two, but very much related. Holy means to be set apart for God. Okay? It means to be dedicated to God, to be different from the rest of the world. So here's another major point. Our happiness, again talking about now internal peace from God, grows by becoming holy. When you grow in your holiness, you'll become happier. It's incorrect to start to think of God on the side of holiness and not on the side of happiness, where we're just supposed to be walking and not ever expressing any joy. We're just trying hard not to sin. While Satan, on the other hand, is just about having fun and being happy and carefree. It's a mistake to think that way. John Wesley, the founder of our denomination, says, "You cannot be happy without being holy. God is the source of all happiness. And our sin separates us from God. And because our sin has separated us from God, we've twisted what the word happiness means. And we start to try to find it in another way. We take a shortcut. It's like the apple looks good, but it's poison. That's what we've done. Now, holy and happy are related, but they're not the same word. It's like, have you seen the DNA, double helix of a DNA? It's like the two strands are kind of woven together. Now, why does all this matter? Why have I spent so much time defining words? It gets confusing. Just to think, if we're confused, if we, the church, are confused, just think about what the world is. They're looking for happiness. That's all they know. And we don't even know if that's what we're offering. We must eliminate this confusion. The Bible doesn't separate holiness, joy from happiness. Maybe we shouldn't either. And today, more and more people think that the church isn't even full of happy people. They don't associate happiness with the church, with Christians anymore. Why is that? So many of them think we are angry and we're callous. We're so busy fighting for our causes, which is a good thing. Fight for your cause. But they don't see our happiness anymore. Now, I realize there's some danger zones here. And I'm going to deal with that major danger zone next week when I talk about pain and hardship. Because otherwise, we're just talking about more of an Oprah philosophy or something. You'll just do whatever you can to be happy. I get that. But we have to admit, if our kids lined up here, if they think that the church is full of happy people, the odds are going to be so much increased that they're either going to stay in the church or at least return to the church at some point than if they don't. Bottom line. And we can't be happy unless we're holy. St. Thomas Aquinas said, man is unable not to wish to be happy. It's who we are. If you're a follower of Christ, if you feel like you're born again, you've made that decision, let me ask you a question. Would you really have turned your life over to Christ if he had not in some way or another made your life happier? Now, if you're looking for a word that's more of a short-term danger zone that can be sinful or at least lead you into sin, maybe I suggest the word pleasure. Don't use the word happiness. Use the word pleasure. Not that pleasure's all bad either. So now science is researching this, and they're doing all tests on the brain, and I don't trust everything I hear, the latest research, but let's just suppose they've discovered some truth here. They're now saying that our genetic makeup makes up 50% of our happiness level. In other words, your personality type, your DNA, does determine about 50% of your happiness level, if you believe the research. Of course, I wonder if the research even factors the power of the Holy Spirit entering a person's life. But let's just say that it's true. So does science say external circumstances make us happy? Science is now saying that only 10% of our happiness comes from circumstances. Only 10%. And then it only makes us happy for a short time. In other words, to spin it the other way, research says circumstances are not a major factor 90% of the time. And when it's a factor, it comes for a moment and soon evaporates. As soon as we take the item for granted, as soon as the pleasure is passed, money can't buy you happiness. It can only buy you a nice red sports car to go look for happiness in. The problem is that in a few days, the red sports car isn't such a big deal. So now what do? Well, either you got to get a new circumstance. Maybe now you have to go buy a black all-wheel drive extended cab truck. Or you're going to have to figure out a way to discover some lasting happiness. Now, I have to be careful of this myself. I've always been a collector. I like to collect certain things. When I was younger, I had comic books. I had 2,000 comic books at one time. For the last 30 years, I guess I'm still a kid because I just graduated barely up from comic books. Now I collect basketball cards. And I can wait months for a card. But once I get it, I start thinking about the next card, right? I got to be careful. We live from circumstance to circumstance. Now, I realize if you're poor enough and you don't have food or shelter, your circumstances are probably going to make a bigger difference in your happiness level if you're just talking about basic needs. But you don't have to travel very far in this world to find people with a lot less who are much happier, right? You ever been overseas? Seen some of those kids in those poor countries? And you think, oh, how could they live like that? And they're as happy as they can be. They know something we don't. Because most Americans' mindset about happiness is, I will be happy when I buy, when I get, or when I experience this. And then when it happens, it's not it. It's the next one after that. We keep doing things to make us feel good for the moment. And again, God is fine with, don't think that I'm preaching that you can't enjoy your life and enjoy some of the circumstances and you can't have fun. I'm just saying is if that's all we do, we constantly have to feed ourselves the next pleasure, the next circumstance to help us feel good about life. It'd be like eating junk food and saying, well, I sure hope that gives me all the vitamins and strength I need for the week. I ain't going to do it. They're going to taste good for a moment, and then that's about it. So if science is correct, that leaves about 40% of our happiness that is up to us to determine. So here's your in-your-face question today. And by the way, if I haven't already drawn your attention to the bulletin, I'm putting application points in the sermon notes now. So I'm asking you to check the bulletin every week, open it up, in the sermon notes, there's boxes you can check. Totally up to you. Totally. I'm not going to collect these. I'm hoping you'll take them home. And you'll just commit to doing whatever of those on that list you decide to do. So let me ask you this in-your-face question. Do you spend most of your time working on the 10% circumstances or the 40%, which I'm going to call deep happiness? That's the term that I'm feeling like I'd be a good term to use. Deep happiness. Because just happiness is a little confusing. But this deep happiness that comes from the peace of God, which do you spend more of your time working on? Deep happiness comes from a deep understanding of who God is, what Christ has done, what the Spirit is doing. Having a deep happiness is far better and lasts far longer than a pleasurable circumstance. Vacations end, don't they? It's based on holiness. John Wesley again says, all people will desire happiness. The gospel offers present and eternal happiness. People are drawn towards happy Christians, and God is the sole origin of happiness. We believe in a happy God, a holy God. Yeah, a righteous God too. But he is happy. The Father, Son, and the Spirit take delight in us. And I realize today week one is a heady message. We're going to move into more emotions and heart stuff the next 2 weeks. But let's finish the message with some practical application and to move from our head to our heart. So if you have that Zephaniah passage and you happen to look that up, otherwise it's in your bulletin, it's on the screen. Zephaniah 3:17. First I'm going to read it and then I'm going to read it again. But okay, the Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. Okay, now let me repeat it. The Lord, your God, the mighty warrior, the king, the lion, he saves. Our God takes great delight in you. In you. In you. And in me. In his great, boundless love, He will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. You want to be happy? I mean, deep happy. Embrace a God who delights in his children. Begin to see yourself as God sees you. Does that mean I'm broken though, right? Yeah, I'm broken. I'm a sinner though, right? Yeah, I'm a sinner. Selfish, right? Yeah, I got the trifecta going. But still, his beloved child who he delights in. Do you know you can bring a smile to God's face? Do you know you do that? Because God delights in you. When you start to get that, when you start to spend time getting that, your happiness will start to run deep. And I know there's other factors.